Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Somehow God is in me, and there's a sense in which I am like God and man all at once.
Many religions claim that we will all eventually be gods. The Bible says something so much better. It says, no, God will continue to be God. Man will continue to be man, but God will come upon man.
No way!
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Welcome to the Radio of Wretched, where your breakfast was pretty good today because it was super duper cold in the South. And you know the pro-life thing.
Are you okay? Are you sure you're all right?
No, I'm not all right. Everything is out of sorts and I can't get it sorted because I didn't go to church on Sunday. That's right. We pulled a North Point. Well, it wasn't that extreme. It was a little chilly in the South. That's basically what the whole thing. Well, unless a little further north, Tennessee, you got some snow. Where I come from, which of course, in my perspective, is the epicenter of the planet. It got cold. There was a little bit of rain. There was a touch of ice for a minute, but it was nothing compared to what the alarmist said it was going to be. Nevertheless, I did see a press release where Andy Stanley shut down the church until after the 4th of July. You know, just to make sure people are safe. Got to be safe. Got to be safe. Be safe out there. Isn't it? I heard people saying that, by the way. It reminded me of COVID time. That's when the word safe, if you had the trademark on the word safe, you were making ka-ching at COVID time. Be safe out there. Be safe. Hey, stay safe. Okay. All right. Not walking into a war zone. I think I'm gonna be all right. We became the stay safe people. And that was kind of the attitude that I experienced with our supposed ice storm. Hey, stay safe out there. Well, I got here and I'm safe. Pretty confident I'll be safe unless, of course, the Lord wills I get into an accident. But I don't think that's going to be because of my lack of being safe. I'm pretty sure North Point, they might be shut down for all of 2026. They want to make sure. Well, we shut down on Saturday night. We decided, let's not do church. It killed us to do it. And I have to tell you, I'm out of sorts. Because church is your aligner. It's your nighttime retainer. Yeah, I'm gonna keep going for this. It's your joint chiropractic clinic where you have to go every week because you know you're just kind of in and out. It's the joint chiropractic, it's sort of like the McDonald's of chiropractic clinics. It's cheap and it's fast, and you gotta keep going back. Otherwise, you just don't ever feel like fixed completely. That's what it's like to not go to church. I'm not fixed. I've not been put into alignment. I've not been righted. If it has been your propensity to skip church, and if you're wondering why you maybe just life isn't feeling quite right, it's because of lack of consistency in going to church. I am so persuaded via the Bible and experience. You've got to forsake the assembling of saints. Now, of course, there can be legitimate times. An ice storm can be a legitimate time. It wouldn't have been safe on Sunday morning to drive. That would have been foolishness. Because I think Sunday morning, it was genuinely... Jimmy, up where you're a little further north than we are.
Yeah.
Were you slip sliding away up there?
Oh, yes. You couldn't even walk outside the door. I mean, everything was just frozen shut. About an inch of ice.
Yeah. We didn't have that much ice. But it was nevertheless, it wasn't wise to do it. And so with just, on Saturday night, we waited till the last possible moment to make that decision in hopes we could be to church on Sunday because it is the thing that just sets your compass straight. Can't say it points you north anymore because, well, that's been ruined from the church that's closed till Independence Day. It's like, okay, all right. All right, I remember now who God is, who I is, how the planet runs, what's important, Now I can go to work. And without that, I'm telling you, it out of sorts. But I did learn a little something. As we're texting about this on Saturday night, I was informed that the church in Woodstock, Faith in Woodstock, real good church, that he was going to do, that Shane was going to do a Sunday morning, just the YouTube, the internet, with AI, however you do the thing with the, where you show up in people's computers. What is that called, Jimmy?
Like, Zoom?
I guess.
Something like that.
Yeah. Where they could still get together. And I went, why didn't we think of that? And then it got worse. Because it was Sunday morning, Mrs. Friel gets a text from Mrs. Allen and said, oh, we just listened to Kevin DeYoung's sermon and it was amazing. So we went and found Kevin's sermon, which he recorded on Saturday because the weather was still good. And it showed like they basically did the church service on Saturday because they knew they were going to be closing on Sunday. And I remember thinking I should have had a V8 and we should have done that too. So if in... you're in a region where you might just shut down because it's not safe for people to travel, you might want to consider those two options. You could still meet on Sunday morning, a little bit more casual perhaps, but still a message from the pastor, getting together to pray. That ain't church, but it's a reminder, hey, this is the most important thing in my life. This is the most important hour of the week. And then the other option is, if you have the same type of dynamic and timing, you could do it on Saturday. Oh, why didn't I think of that? So, based on the recommendation of Mrs. Allen, we decided to go find Kevin DeYoung. That boy has gotten good as a preacher. Wow. They're working through the Book of Romans in his church. He's in one of the Carolinas. I can never remember which. And I don't know how old Kevin is. I think his age now is higher than the number of children they have. I'm not exactly sure, but I think he's old because he was a pup when I first saw him.
He's 48.
48. Mm-hmm. How many kids does Kevin have?
47.
Even as you said that, the Duggars are at home going, oh, how come we couldn't get to that? No. So how many kids, Google him.
I am.
All right, let's find out how many, because he's got a passel of children. That's right, passel of children. And he's still a relatively young fellow. And his preaching, it was so remarkable to me because they're preaching through the Book of Romans. He mentioned that, hey, we're taking a break from that because it's this. And we wanted the whole church to be together and not miss anything in the Book of Romans. Okay. So that means he picked a text sometime that week, probably not earlier than Tuesday. And he was preaching from Mark. He was talking, it was so structured and it was so well outlined and it was 3 points and he moved through them with pace, did enough exposition to show, look, we're working through the text and yet pulling out the meaning and the application of the text. And I thought he kind of just whipped that baby together because they're working through the Book of Romans, and he handled it that well. Whew, it was the beautiful story of the leper who wanted to be cleansed. I know you can, Lord, if you will. Oh. And I believe that Kevin's outline was, if you want to be made clean, then you've got to recognize you got a problem. That's where it starts. You've got to recognize that you have something worse than a skin disease. You've got yourself a sin disease and you've got to recognize it. And then you've got to come to the one and expressing your need for him and trusting that he can cleanse and forgive you. It was magnificent. He even tied in a little bit of Macbeth. It was like, dude, hoofda. It was, Jimmy, what sermon did you listen to on Sunday morning?
I did. Our pastor.
No, that's right. It's You know what? I've gotten used to being spiritually superior.
We had something.
You didn't listen to anything, did you?
I did. We had something from our pastor.
Did you?
Yeah, he sent it.
What did they? Oh, did Charlie do it too?
Well, yeah.
Oh, I'm such a loser. Ay, ay, ay. Everybody apparently had their act together, but Alpharetta Bible Church. So Charlie did something on Sunday morning?
Yeah, he sent something out to the entire church. Are you okay?
No, I'm not. Now that you've revealed that, and that you're equal in spirituality to me, it's going to take some adjusting in my mind. I feel like, why didn't we do it? We knew the thing was coming. And even if the weather didn't manifest itself the way that they were predicting, you just got to shut down in the South. I'm telling you, if there is a danger of any sort of storm, look out, Daddy-O. You are just closing down the place. Nevertheless, we were blessed. Even though it wasn't church, it was not our congregation, we were blessed by a handling of the word that was so fine. And I couldn't help but comment, because Kevin DeYoung, he's a Presbyterian. He was preaching like a Baptist. I'm telling you, it was some good gospel preaching. And so we were blessed by that. Nevertheless, it did not make up for the actual assembling of the saints. How's about this? It's still close enough to New Year's. We can all make this commitment. Unless you're not safe, we're going to be in church every single Sunday till we die. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. If you're a man, you're trying to figure out what it actually means to be one, and you've probably noticed, well, the world doesn't make it easy. They say be strong, but not too strong. Lead, but you don't want to be toxic. Look, it's a lot of mixed signals, and after a while, you just stop listening to any of it. And the thing about it is, Scripture is not confused. God has a lot to say about what it means to be a man, and Dr. Adam Tyson unpacks that every week on Way of Manhood. Dr. Tyson is a pastor. He's also a professor at the Masters University, and he's one of our Fortis Institute fellows, and he's not interested in cultural trends. He's interested in what the Bible actually says. And if you're an ongoing monthly gospel partner of Fortis Institute, it is your support that helps make content just like this possible. If you've ever been impacted by this ministry, would you prayerfully consider becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner today? All you have to do is go to fortisinstitute.org right now to find out what it would look like in your life to do just that. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California, beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number six for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Look, I'm going to be straight with you. Every man knows what it's like to fight a battle no one else can see. You wake up, you're determined that today is going to be different. This time, you're going to be stronger than the temptation. But then evening comes. And there you are again, right back where you started. You're making promises to yourself that you already know deep down that you're not going to keep tomorrow. Here's what no one wants to admit. You can't win this fight with willpower. Trust me, if determination alone could break the chains of lust and sin, you would already be free. You've probably figured that out by now. The filters, the accountability apps, the promises to your wife or to yourself, they're just band-aids on a wound that needs surgery. Real freedom, the kind that actually lasts, it only comes when Christ changes you from the inside out. Not just your habits, but your actual heart. That's what Todd Friel gets into very deeply with his resource, Play the Man. It's available right now as an ebook, an audiobook, and video series only at fortisplus.org.
Books of the Bible. Philippians was written by Paul from a Roman prison. It is often called the Epistle of Joy for its encouraging tone. In this letter, Paul encourages the Philippians to live in a manner worthy of the gospel by steadfastness and humility in Christ and cheerful obedience to God, who is working in us to bring about his good pleasure. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Alrighty, so Wretched Radio and stuff and the Bible, things to talk about
what's
here.
What's wrong now, John?
Just feeling like a loser. Seems every other church had some sort of contingency plan, but if I read a Bible church, then I just feel like a loser and out of sorts. So I'm basically two things these days. It seems, Jimmy, everybody had some sort of a plan to do something to bring the people together from the local congregation, except us. Oh, the shame. Do we still have back in the storage room either sackcloth or ashes? I'll take either one because I feel... But I did get to listen to a whiz-bang of a sermon from Kevin DeYoung. Really, really fine preaching. If you're an expositor, you would do well to go listen to his Sunday sermon. And I don't listen to every Kevin DeYoung sermon, but his handling of the word, especially a narrative text, not an easy thing to do. Because you've got theology in it, but you also have a story that's attempting to make a point, typically. So how do you preach that thing expositionally and have it impact the hearts of the hearers? Each genre of the Bible requires a different skill set. How you preach the Proverbs versus the Gospels, that's just a different assignment. Same thing is true, really, with the Epistle. All of the genres... It just requires a dip. That's why there's actually classes and teachings on, for instance, preaching the Psalms. You go, well, you preach it the way that you do all the other stuff, right? No, because it's poetry and it's communicating truths in a different context, in a different language, to a people under a different covenant. That requires just a different set of skills. Different tools need to be in your preaching drawer in order to be able to handle the word rightly. And so it is with a historical narrative. Go listen to it, because I was listening. The good news is I wasn't listening critically. I trust a guy like Kevin DeYoung, unless, of course, he's talking about sprinkling babies with water. Other than that, I was like, okay, he's a smart guy. He's a sound guy. I'm just going to listen to him and let the word speak to me. Let it do whatever it is that God has ordained for it to do, because he always ordains the word to do something to you when you listen to it. But I did, however, notice it's like, okay, he's bringing out some of the context of the text. Remember, it was a one-off sermon. He talked about Hansen's disease, what skin diseases were, but only in as much as it helped us to understand what Jesus was doing. He went back into Leviticus. What did it mean to become impure from touching somebody with leprosy? How do we explain? So there was expositional work that was going on. There's no doubt about it, but it also banged. Point number one, point number two, point number three. And then the ultimate point was you need Christ. You need to go to Jesus Christ. You got a disease, and the only one who can cleanse you is Jesus. Come, you sinners, poor and needy, weak and wounded, sick and sore. Jesus ready stands to save you, full of pity, love, and power. Amen was the sermon. It was a lesson in preaching historical narrative in an expositional way that had direct application. It exalted Jesus. It was a study. It was very fine. I've had an article from Kevin DeYoung sitting on my desk for a bit. Right now, we are seeing a continuing conversation on the internet about something called Christian nationalism in a different article that I just read by Kevin, who's a very fine historian. We just need to lose that term. It's so unhelpful. It's like calling somebody a Christian. Unfortunately, it's like, what are we talking about here? What stripe? What variant are you? Same thing is true with Christian nationalism. I think Kevin is quite even-handed in his treatment. He denies being a Christian nationalist, although, depending on how you define it, he could be. See, that's the problem with using the words. It's like, well, is he or isn't he? Yeah, that's the problem. Nevertheless, I thought his article asking six questions for Christian nationalists was helpful. was helpful. Quote, there are serious theological conversations taking place that should continue, but there are also conversations about political prescriptions that have zero chance of being enacted. Now, I would say that is not the primary argument against some sort of theonomy, but there is a practical aspect. Is this going to work right now or even in the foreseeable future? Quote, I hear some Christian voices expressing outrage that idolatrous worship is tolerated in our nation, but no one has ever pressed on the details of what it would look like to no longer grant legal toleration to false religions. What would that look like? Are we going to have a new ICE that closes down false religions? It's a question worth asking. Color this for us. What does this look like? Do we bulldoze the Buddhist temple immediately? Do we arrest the worshipers on the spot or merely fine them? And should we only suppress foreign religions and target those that don't look like real Americans? Or are Catholics, Jews, and liberal Christians fair game too? I don't want to minimize that the rhetoric can be disturbing, but a lot of the Christian nationalism cacophony is sound and fury signifying nothing. It is easy to seem visionary and fearless when your ideas have the intellectual luxury of impossibility. What does this look like? I think that's one of his questions. Where have you seen this nationalism, this Christian nationalism, where it was like, that rock, that was it. There you had it right there. I'd love to hear what that looked like, because as I read history, I don't see it working out well at all. In fact, it was in the Christian Post, I think. One of their headlines was, they do a this date in history, and it was about King Henry, the second, third, fourth, something like that, in the 11th century. Now, King Henry, of course, was Roman Catholic, but he was taking advantage of appointing bishops. Well, the new reformer pope, Pope Gregory, I think the seventh, maybe the second or the seventh, it had like a couple of I's and maybe a V in it. He was a reformer pope, and he didn't want the kings to have that authority. And so he tried to shut down Henry. Henry didn't like it. And so he started to make accusations against the pope. Ah, you're not the real pope. Yeah, you stole the office. You don't belong there. Letters were exchanged. A lot of letters were exchanged. You can read them online. They're really quite fascinating. And the reformer pope ultimately won to the point where Henry, the king, had to go to the Pope, stand outside barefoot in the snow for 3 days, where he received absolution. Because if he didn't, it was going to be nothing but turmoil in his nation with all of the Roman Catholics that thought, wait a second, England is getting cut off from the Pope? And so that was in the Holy Roman Empire. And we see the Pope actually flexing muscle over the monarch? Is that what we want it to look like in America? Whose Christianity gets to be in charge here? These questions need to be answered. And how do we explain these things to people who don't fit into our theological grid? Back to de Young. When some Christians wax eloquent about the need for a Protestant Franco, or about why we should take the vote away from women, or about why the civil magistrate should crush idolatrous worship, they aren't laying down a constructive alternative to progressivism. They're alienating normal people and stirring up division in the church. And that's what I've seen too much. If you're of the Christian nationalist bent and you believe in the essentials, then I look forward to seeing you in heaven. And I would offer this word to anybody who's stirring it up in the context of their local church. Please stop. Please stop doing that. Yeah, take your pastor out to lunch. You can share what you think and how you feel. Oh, but please don't make this a point of division in your church. Don't try to get people on your side, and don't start talking to other people about how your pastor doesn't talk about these things and he's not tough enough and he needs to be doing more and he needs to be more. Don't do that. You meet with him. De Young, The reality is that if a nation the size of a continent with over 330 million people tried to eradicate religious freedom and move to a 16th century model of the civil magistrate, the cure, air quotes, for religious pluralism would kill the patient more than the disease would. The alternative to the First Amendment is not the glorious sunlit uplands of enlightened national Presbyterianism. And De Young's a Presbyterian, by the way. The alternative is Soviet Russia or Communist China. A status system that spies on its people, violently oppresses dissent, and interposes the reach of government coercion into every area of life. Remember that every attempt in the history of the world to realize heaven on earth has produced absolutely hellish results. Kevin DeYoung, historian, superfine preacher, something to chew on, my theonomist friends. This is Wretched Radio.